Okay, welcome to this first lecture in the course of discrete mathematics. It's about logic and proofs. The first five chapters in this course is more background material, refreshing your memories from previous course, and then we will go into the new things in chapter 7, 8, 9, and a little bit about 10, chapter 10 also. But today the subject is logic and proofs. And we have something called propositional logic, satslogik in Swedish. Volvo is an Italian car, statement. Obviously wrong. Then we can extend this to something that is more interesting for mathematics, and that's predicate logic. The tomato contains water. Well, we have to check this tomato. Maybe more mathematical interesting, it could be then x is greater than 3. Well, which x? Is it square root of 12? Then it's true, but if it's minus 1/2, then it's false. I think you should spend most time here with sections 1.6 and 1.7. I use the sixth edition, by the way, and this is about proofs. And it's very readable, I think. For the rest, we just take a quick overview. You can get used to the notations that appears sometimes in the course. Okay, section 1.1, page 1. We have some propositions, P and Q. Like Volvo is an Italian car. We can take the opposite, negation, that symbol. And we have used some connectives, and or. And we can put up such truth tables, like, we have a compound statement P and Q. And I give it one example there. If P and Q is only true if both are true, of course, otherwise it's false. And we have implications. P implies Q, Q implies P. And if both of them holds, then we say that P is P with double arrows there. If and only if they are equivalent statements. Then I turn page to page 2, and to make this a little bit more funny, there could be logical puzzles, and here is first one example from Smuljans. He has written a lot of books about logic and puzzles. He has written a book I like very much. It's called The Chess Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes. It's very funny. Sherlock Holmes is not interested in playing chess, but when he comes to a chess club, he wants, of course, to investigate how this position appeared on the board. It's like a crime story, and they are incredible positions. And you don't believe that they can appear on the chessboard, but they can. So if you like chess and puzzles, that's a book I can recommend for you. Okay. Here it's a puzzle I take from the book here. You come to an island and there are two kind of creatures living there, knights. They always tell the truth. and some other ones, the knaves, they always lie. And then you meet two persons, A and B, and then they tell you, B is a knight, says A. B says, the two of us are opposite types. Can you from this tell the type of A and B? Are they knaves or are they knights? That's a logical puzzle. Tautology is a compound proposition that is always true. P or not P. I am a Swedish citizen or I am not a Swedish citizen. A contradiction is a compound proposition that is always false. Finland belongs to the European Union and it does not belong to the European Union. Such, that's a contradiction. And there are very nice tables all around in this book, and you should get used to these tables, can have a look. Remember, you are allowed to use the book on the exam. The Morgan's Laws, for instance, a statement to the left there is, as they say, logical equivalent to the one to the right. If it's false to the left, it's false to the right. If it's false to, it's true to the left, it's true to the right. You can check the, you can check the truth tables. Okay. And then we come to this predicate logic, says that's more interesting for mathematics, maybe. We have some propositional function here, px, and we have a statement like x smaller than 7. X is the variable. To be less than 7 is the predicate. So, and then we of course have to put in something to say if it's true or false. P5 is true, P9 is false. And quantifiers also appear often in mathematical text. Or for all x, px, the last symbol there means there exists an x such that p of x holds. Let's turn page and get an example of this. Page 3. The domain here, of course, we have always to specify a domain where we are, which set we are considering. And here I take in this example the real numbers. So the statement, there is an x such that x cubed is equal to minus 1. Is this true? There is. Can I find such an x? Well, you don't have to think so long before you realize that minus 1 does the job. Minus 1 cubed is equal to minus 1. So this is a true statement. There is an x such that x to the power of 4 is less than x squared? It's not correct for 2 and 3 and so on, but if you go down to real numbers between 0 and 1, and it's true. So we can find such x. 1/2 is an example. What do you say about the two last ones there? For all x, minus x squared is equal to x squared. For all real numbers. Think about it. I think it's true. And the next one. For all x, all real numbers, 2x is greater than x. Of course, you can draw the lines there, left and right hand side, and see how they are looking like. If you go to negative x, you see that this is obviously false. And also for x equal to 0. Zero is not greater than zero. Nested quantifiers. And there on the middle of the page there, for all x, there exists a y such that x plus y is equal to zero. That's the meaning of these symbols there. Is this true? Well, that depends on the domain where we are, which set we are considering. If we take positive integers, it's false, because if I take x x equals 7, I can't find any positive integer such that 7 plus y is equal to 0. I have to extend to the negative integers also, considering all integers, then it's true. Next is our example, similar way. For all x, there exists a y such that x equal to 1 divided by y. That's obviously false, and you can give a counter example. If I take x equal to 7, well, then y should be equal to 1 divided by 7, but that is not an integer. There are rules for inference. What can you have some valid statements there, and what kind of conclusions can you make? There is a quote from the book, so proofs in mathematics are valid arguments that establish the truth of mathematical statements. And there is a table there also for valid arguments. And I give you one example here. Let's say at bottom of page 3, your friend tells you something like, if it snows tomorrow, I will go skiing. So P is snow tomorrow, it will snow tomorrow, and Q is I will go skiing. If you find that your friend is not skiing, then you don't have to look outside the window. You know it's not snowing. And this is formalized, such things, in these rules of inference. The three dots there, dots there, means therefore. If not Q, and P implies Q, and we have then therefore not P. And to the right there, I have written the compound statement. And you should, as an exercise, you could check the truth tables and find that this is always true. I turn page. And now I come to something that I find more interesting for us. I am not an expert on logic at all, but I love mathematics in various forms. And logic could be a good thing when we run into should do a proof method. Sorry, I have a bad throat today. I hope it will improve. I plan to do first these five basic introduction lectures, and then I will do maybe six more on chapter 7 to 10. We will see. Okay, page 4, introduction to informal proofs. Proofs that we humans do. Nowadays, maybe machines can do proofs also, but we are humans. Axioms is in the bottom. Think of a mathematical theory like a house or some building. In the bottom you have some axioms. Theorems you don't prove, that you take for granted. Postulates, they say. Definitions also. We have to define some things. And then we can start to prove some things of, like when they are called theorems, if they are important. If there are some small theorems that are only helping us for proving something big, it's called a lemma. And a theorem that follows from another theorem is called a corollary. And first creation of this kind, I think, is the Euclid's elements. For geometry, I give a website there where you can find all his books. Start, if you have want to have a look, you can start with book 1, where there are some axioms for plane geometry. If I remember, the first one is something like between two points there is exactly one line. Etc. Very impressive work. But one should have something in mind there. I put it in the middle of page 4, and it's a quotation from our book. Such presentations do not convey the discovery process in mathematics. And that is in page 97. I think this is a very important statement, because most textbooks you get the full story and you don't realize really how much thinking, how much trouble and discussions and fights and despair and all things that can happen on the way. I think it's very important to think about this. Okay, I list some kind of proofs here, proof methods. You can do a direct proof, P implies Q. Well, start with P and work on. You can do another important thing is to do it by contraposition. You assume not Q and try to see that this implies not P. That's the method. Proof by contradiction. You assume the contrary and run into some contradiction. Proof by cases. If there are many, that's for computers, I think. But if there are, you can often you see you have to go through 1, 2, 3, 4 cases. Existence proof. You prove something that something exists, and there are also uniqueness proofs. Are there more than one of this kind? No. Often you assume then there are two of them, and then you work on and show that these two must be equal. Are there open problems in mathematics? Yes, they are of various importance. I list some here. The most famous one is the Riemann hypothesis. That's from 1859. It's about the prime numbers, really, the distribution of the prime numbers. And this Riemann, he constructed a function of one complex variable. And he was very interested where the zeros of this function lies. It lies in the complex plane, and by hand he calculated the first few of them. And they seems to lie on a certain line in the complex plane. And nowadays with computers, when I found that there are infinitely many zeros, it turns out, and all computer investigations tells us that shows that so far that all of them lies on the certain line there. But no one has been able to prove it. A famous one that is easier to explain is the Goldbach's conjecture. To even all even numbers greater than 4 greater or equal to 4 can be written as a sum of two primes. I have started out with the first even numbers there, and you see like 10, it can be written as 5 plus 5. It's not unique, I can write it as 7 plus 3 also. And so on. But that is seems, it's also very hard to prove. It's an open problem. If it's possible to do this for all positive even numbers. You know a prime, then its prime has no divisors except one and itself. And last here, it's from the book, and it's 3x plus 1 conjecture, that it's called. This is interesting thing. You start with any positive integer. I give 11 there. And then you do the following. If it's odd, this number, you multiply it with 3 and add 1. And 11 is odd, so we take 3 times 11 plus 1, there we get 34. Now 34 is an even number, and then the rule is that we should divide by 2. Then I get 17, that's odd, so I multiply with 3 and add 1, I get 52, even. I divide by 2, 26. Now it's still even, so I divide by 2 again, I get 13, that's odd. And then I continue so. Will this end somewhere? Well, after a while that happens, that you run to 40, you go to 20, you go to 10, you go to 5, you go to 16. It's 16 is only built up by twos, factors of 2, 8, 4, 2, 1. And then you see, if you have reached 4, then you will lie in a cycle forever. 4, 2, 1. 4, 2, 1. 4, 2, 1. And the question is, the open problem here is, if I start with any positive integer, 16 billion, 255 or whatever, will I always run into this cycle 4, 2, 1? If I continue do this, will I always run into this cycle? That's an open problem. I think there have been a lot of computer investigations, and it seems all computer investigations tells us that, but how to prove it? This leads to something, I should say something about discrete mathematics. You could say that discrete mathematics is for computer science the same position as calculus is for physics or so. But I will say it's much more than that, because for instance in teaching in a high school level and so, I think it should be compulsory for teachers to have a course in discrete mathematics, because you have no limits are tricky when you work with in calculus and real numbers. But you see, the flavor is very much the same, because look at this last example here with the 3x plus 1 conjecture. If you consider differential equations, you have often these things that you have what's called an attractor. You start somewhere and the particle is moving around with time, then you solve a so-called differential equation, and it will end up at some attractor. It's attracted to a certain orbit. Well, we have it already here in the discrete case. You could say that the orbit 4, 2, 1 is an attractor. And I think one should see this on an early stage in the mathematical education. And we will come back to this in chapter 7, I think, with recursive relations, and solve them. And when we go over to the continuous case, then it's called a ordinary differential equation, and a differential equation, and not much more is happening. You have it already there in the discrete case. it's easier to explain to investigate this, because you don't need limits and derivatives and such things. And moreover, discrete mathematics is very beautiful subject of I like graph theory very much. That's chapter 9. Okay, I finish page 5 with an example from the book. You know triangles, like 3, 4, 5, Pythagorean theorem. We can find such a triangle with sides 3, 4, 5. We can take 5, 12, 13 is another. Are there more integer solutions to this equation? X squared plus y squared equal to z squared. We have found two triples there. If there are integer solutions, we can divide both sides with z squared. And then we get two rational numbers, u and v. U squared plus v squared is equal to 1. So what we are really interesting here is the, you know, u squared plus v squared equal to 1, that's the unit circle. And we are interested of finding rational points on the unit circle. And in this exercise in the book, they get a hint. We get a hint how to construct integer solutions. You put simply x equal to m squared minus n squared. M and n are integers. We can take m greater than n, so we consider only positive ones. And for any then m and n, you construct x and y and z in the way given there. Y is 2 times m times n, z is equal to m squared plus n squared. Can you check now that x squared plus y squared is equal to z squared if you use these m and n? Check that. So there are infinitely many rational points on this unit circle. Now comes something surprising. Are there integer solutions to x cubed plus y cubed equal to z cubed, or even higher exponents? We could take 4 or 5 up there. And this is really the so-called Fermat's last theorem. That was proved by Andrew Wiles, 94 or maybe 95, and the answer is no. There are no integer solutions if you increase the exponent above 2. And if you rephrase this with this u and v, then we divide by z cubed or z to the power of 4 or so, we get curves un plus v u to the power of n plus v to the power of n equal to 1. These curves, if you think about it, they will lie in the shaded region up there in the figure. Can you convince yourself about that? You could put u equal to v, for instance, and think about it. And this, what Wiles proved really, was that these curves up there in the shaded region, they will never hit a rational point. Quite amazing. Okay, next lecture is about set theory.